You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to this episode of the Business of Practice podcast, where we focus on the business and human sides of equine veterinary medicine. In this episode, we're going to talk to a veterinarian who owns a practice focused on integrative modalities and rehab services, Dr. Marianne Marshall Gibson, to learn about her practice and recommendations for those in the equine industry considering this option for their careers. I'm your host, Dr. Amy Grice, business consultant and former equine practice owner. The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you in 2024 by Care Credit. Dr. Marianne Marshall Gibson grew up at her parents' 54-stall hunter-jumper and dressage facility in the Chicago suburbs. She began riding at age 6 and later competed in hunters and equitation. She earned her BS degree in materials science and engineering biomaterials at the University of Illinois. She then pursued her MS in cancer biology at the University of Colorado, where she also conducted human cancer research. While earning her DVM at Colorado State University, Dr. Marshall Gibson also became certified in veterinary medical acupuncture. After graduating in 2014, she completed an internship at Steinbeck Country Equine Clinic in California, after which she did a sports medicine and diagnostic imaging fellowship at Northwest Equine Performance in Oregon. During her internship and fellowship, Dr. Marshall Gibson also completed training in animal chiropractic at the Animal Chiropractic Education Source, ACES, in Texas, and is certified in animal chiropractic. Due to her interest in rehabilitation and performance medicine, Dr. Marshall Gibson attended the Integrative Veterinary Medical Institute at the University of Florida and completed her certification in equine rehabilitation and performance medicine. She recently completed an alternative track residency to obtain her board certification by the American College of Veterinary Sports Medicine and Rehabilitation equine section. Dr. Marshall Gibson is the owner of Front Range Equine Performance, serving Northern Colorado's Front Range, Steamboat Springs, and Laramie, Wyoming. The practice provides diagnostic imaging, rehabilitation, acupuncture, and chiropractic care to identify and treat equine performance problems. Welcome, Dr. Marshall Gibson. You have had a fascinating educational journey. I just loved learning about it, and I'm eager to learn more about your experiences. I particularly want to know how your early experiences in biomedical science and research influence your interest in alternative therapies and rehabilitation.
Well, thank you, Dr. Grice, for having me today. I'm very honored to be here. I'm excited to share all of those things with you. So I think that's a great question. Ultimately, you know, I think everything started in my parents' barn. I think one of the first things I can remember influencing me was having one of the veterinarians out, and he was a specialist in lameness. His name was Dr. Keith Merritt, and I was very fortunate to grow up learning from him. And he brought this machine out, and he opened it up, and he put this probe on the leg, and all of a sudden there was this image. And he could look inside the horse and he could say, there is the injury right there. What do we do about it? You know, growing up on my parents' farm, we obviously had a lot of show horses and things like that, but we all know horses are horses and they injure themselves. And being able to look inside that horse, I thought that was fascinating. And just the technology that we had then, but also the potential to have better technology and better ways of treating horses going forward, I think is really what influenced my track. And so you know, yes, I love the horses. It was fun to show and all that, but I was the person who, I was the barn owner's daughter. We didn't have the money to go to the horse shows, but I loved being in the barn and taking care of those horses that had those tendon injuries and helping them get back, doing the exercise programs to get them back to where they could go out with their owners and perform. And so that led me to what can I do? What other areas are there out there that we can bring into veterinary medicine that might make better treatment options for our horses and our equine athletes? And that's where I was fortunate enough, and I lived in Illinois and we had an excellent engineering school. And they happened to have a program where you could look at different materials and things that might be used to make different prostheses or treatment options, imaging equipment, so that we could better diagnose our equine patients and athletes and get them back to function. And so that's where I decided I was going to go into engineering. What I learned there, we were presented with a problem, right? And in an engineering situation, you have a problem, you solve it. And so it wasn't an if you were going to solve it, it was how you were going to solve it. And through my training, we started at the ground level. We looked at the molecular structure of different things. You know, this aluminum alloy has these particular molecular properties. This is how it's going to function. This is the type of stress strain it can undergo. This is the type of situation it is appropriate to use. This situation is good for this type of overarching global structure, like a bridge. So it really taught me from the ground up, you have to understand the very small part of what's going on, but also the bigger picture. Where are you going?
And the materials science part of it. Like when you think of tendons and how the fibers are aligned, I mean, like it's fascinating. It's this, what a background to like go into this. This is fabulous.
Absolutely. And that's really where it came from, is thinking back to that hole in that tendon that Dr. Merritt saw. Okay, well, what do we have? What building blocks do we have in the horse's body to get it back to its maximum potential structure and tendon properties, right? To perform at where we want it to perform. And so that led me to going into more of a biology background in the cancer research, because you have a lot of cell signaling going on in there. You have to work with different types of structures, again, in the human body, that you have all sorts of types of cancers that exist, and they are in different types of tissues. And ultimately, they are controlled by different signaling mechanisms. So just understanding the intricacies of what is going on in the body, not only in a cancer standpoint, but also in a normal tissue, I think was very helpful in my training, and leading that to further into my veterinary background, again, back to the horses. How do we get these horses, these tendons? Yes, we need to get those healed, but then going broader. Okay, well, that structure is healed now, but why did that happen? Why did it fail? Mm-hmm. So we fixed the tendon, but above that was the muscle that is around, that's connected to that tendon. Is it malfunctioning? If it is, why? Is it up higher? Is it because there's a nerve impingement? Why is that nerve impinged? Is it because we have a misalignment in the vertebral column that goes to the chiropractic side of it? We need to look at the whole body to make sure that that tendon doesn't injure itself again. And so that's where I think all of that led back to the rehabilitation and other modalities.
It's so fascinating. And you have such an amazing background now, you know, just having gone through all that education, it must make what you do all the more like exciting and thought, you know, there's so much thought that goes into it. It must be really fun. And how did that lead you into deciding to start a practice that was focused, you know, on those modalities?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. You know, I was very fortunate to work with wonderful veterinarians throughout my entire life. I think that a lot of my inspiration came from being able to work with some of the fabulous rehabilitation veterinarians at the CSU sports medicine division, Dr. Melissa King and Dora Ferris and Aaron Contino. You know, they've been huge influences in my life. I just remember meeting Melissa for the first time and the way she looked at things, just a little bit differently. And also, you know, at that time, they were just starting to kind of incorporate more acupuncture and different exercises for targeting different muscles and things. And that really spoke to me and my engineering background in you know, kind of figuring out exactly what's going on with a horse. And to the point, I had done fabulous internships. I had wonderful experiences, but I hadn't found a practice that really meshed with my values and really meshed with my passion and what I wanted to excel at. And so I think at the time that I started the practice, and I'm gonna go into a little bit different place. I honestly was in a situation where a lot of veterinarians, unfortunately, I think, get into where they were in a little bit of a conundrum. I hadn't found a place to land where I felt I was going to be happy. My husband and I were not financially stable. And I didn't live with my husband at the time, to be honest with you. He was still back in Oregon and I had moved back to Colorado, to work at a practice that unfortunately it didn't work out with. And, I was a little bit stuck and I almost left veterinary medicine.
Oh my.
I was at a point where I just wasn't sure there was a practice out there that existed that where I could be happy. Mm-hmm. And so my dad sat me down, and my dad is a wonderful man. He has a background in nothing with veterinary medicine, but in finance, corporate finance. And he looked at me and he just said, "Marianne, what makes you happy?" And I said, "I love being in the barn behind the horses, figuring out what's wrong with them and getting them back to where they are comfortable and happy, can do what their owners want them to do. And then maybe they never see me again. That's what makes me happy." And so he said, "Well, why can't you do that?" And I said, "Well, I don't know." You know, because I'm broke and my right. husband's not here. And, you know, it's scary. It's terrifying thinking of doing that. But he said, "Well, is there a need for it?" And I said, "Yes." So I ultimately started talking to other veterinarians in the area. I said, "Look, this is what I'm good at. And this is what I'm passionate about." And I just wrote out a business plan with my values and my mission and my vision. And I started from there. And for me, it was, I valued education. And I had always thought about doing a sports medicine residency. I valued that very highly. The people that I respected had gone through the residency program and were diplomates of the American College of Veterinary Sports Medicine and Rehabilitation. I enjoyed the alternative modalities. I thought that they were very promising. You know, not everybody can afford the gold standard treatment for every horse, but there's a lot we can do with alternative things with Eastern medicine. And then just having a space where people could bring their horses, where I can help them as much as I can. So that's really what drove me to start the practice. And, you know, it was terrifying every step of the way, but we did it.
The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you by Care Credit. Care Credit keeps equine veterinarians at the heart of care by providing horse owners with simple, budget-friendly financing options. By helping to bridge the gap between costs and care, Care Credit supports healthy financial relationships between veterinarians and their clients. Clients have a flexible way to pay over time for all types of care, and practices get paid in 2 business days. It's a payment experience everyone can feel good about.
What were the most important things you learned in that first year or two? Because nobody starts a business like understanding all the stuff. And so what were like some couple of things that you learned that you were surprised at?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing was defining your mission, vision, and values.
So important. Really, really.
It really is. And you got to start there. And I think you have to do it two ways. I think you have to do your personal mission, vision, and values. And I tell every young practitioner this, define your vision, mission, and values, and then find a practice where that aligns.
So important. So important.
Because they exist. They do exist.
They do.
And then from there, moving that onto the business. This is my business's mission, vision, and values. And they had to align with my personal values for sure. And so I think that is what the core of everything was. And then sticking to it, you know?
Uh-huh. Sometimes not as easy, huh?
It's not. And I think that's where a lot of people, especially, and I struggled with it too, right? Like I said earlier, we were broke, mm-hmm. you know? So it's easy to get sucked into the, hey, while you're here, you know, I don't want to pay for an exam, but can you inject this coffin joint?
Uh-huh.
Is that really how I want to practice? Is that the veterinarian I want to be? And the answer is no. You know, I stuck to, we don't do general practice, so I will not carry vaccines on my truck. Mm-hmm. Do not own a dental float. My personal horse, another veterinarian comes in and takes care of, because that is not what I do. So I think clearly defining what your practice is and what it is not, and sticking mm-hmm. to it, is the biggest lesson that I learned. And also, every step is terrifying, as I've said, but there is business out there for everyone. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, don't be scared. It does take time to find your right people, but you have a niche. Every vet is going to click with a certain group of people, and you don't need to be threatened by the other vets out there. They're your friends. They're your colleagues. I think, figuring out a way to get along with each other so you can all have your niche and you can all have your clients and all be a happy community.
Yeah, when you think about it, it's just like not everybody. I like to think of, okay, Coca-Cola versus Pepsi. And people are like, I'm a Diet Coke girl. I'm not drinking that other stuff. It's awful. You know, clients want... You want the clients that want what you are, you know, right. And then everybody's going to be happy. And so I agree with you wholeheartedly. Mm-hmm. How did you structure your practice? Like when somebody's going to have a practice that's limited to something, like how did you structure that? How did you communicate that?
What I did was I reached out to some of the key veterinarians in the area. And I just said, you know, this is, again, this is what I am and this is what I'm not. And I was very clear in the beginning to my clients, again, this is what I am. This is what I'm not. I wrote down, starting again with my vision, mission, and values. I'm going to be a broken record a little bit on that.
I love it because it's so important.
It is. And just making sure I wrote out clearly what my expectations were of the practice and what I felt other veterinarians and other clients would expect of a practice limited to what I wanted to be. And again, sticking to it. So the way I structured it was just saying, these are our hours. We will work, our phones are available 8 to 5:30 Monday through Friday. We don't do after hours emergency. That doesn't mean that I'm not working on horses until 9 o'clock at night, but it means that you have my full attention for my expertise in these areas whenever I'm with you and your horse. And so I think that just making that very clear from the get-go and sticking to it is how I define the
practice. I love that you wrote it down, because that is a disciplined way for a person to take what they're thinking in their heads that's churning around in their brain and actually memorializing it, so it holds them accountable in a way. And so I think that advice is incredibly important, to write it down. Yes. Because then you really have committed to it, right? So jumping to a different topic that's also pretty interesting, what was it like to do a residency? Isn't it like a really long period of time wow. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it was. So I was fortunate in that when I started the practice, Dr. Dora Ferris, who now is in Oregon, we actually flip-flopped locations. So I came from Oregon and back to Colorado, and then she and her husband moved from Colorado to Oregon. So I was able to work with her while she was still practicing in the area, and came up with the idea one day. And I said, I've always wanted to do a residency for personal reasons. I cannot apply for a formal residency. I'm already starting this practice. Would you be willing to mentor me? And to my elation, she said yes.
So there's two tracks.
There are.
One is sort of academic, and then one is, what do you call it, non-traditional, or what do you call it when it's...
Yeah. So it initially was called alternative track by the ACVSMR, or non-traditional. So basically what you have to do is the same requirements as a traditional residency, but you get twice the amount of time to do it. So
gotcha.
Traditional residency, you get 3 years. I had 6 years to complete it, which was great because of COVID. For me, I still had to spend 6 weeks with an internal medicine specialist, with a surgeon, a separate 6 weeks, another 6 weeks with diagnostic imaging experts, mm-hmm. so radiologists, and then a couple of weeks with a boarded anesthesiologist, in addition to many, many weeks, about 36, with a boarded ACVSMR diplomate.
And so you could break that time up, though. You didn't have to do 6 weeks in a row, right? You could just...
Did Correct.
You? Okay.
No. So, starting the practice, again, that also helped that I defined everything and what mm-hmm. I was and was not, because I could take time away, because I did have to take time away to go spend time with those people. It probably lent to the practice growing maybe a little bit slower than most practices would have grown. But again, that was very important to me, is I see the value in the diplomate status. And so I was going to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was serendipitous, right? Because mm-hmm. if it had grown and you had all that pressure on you, it would have been really, really hard.
Right.
To go and get away. And you had a baby along the way too, right? Just a small thing when you're in the middle of a residency and running a business, a small thing.
Yeah. I always say I don't like to do anything easy.
That's right. You get right after it.
Yeah.
So Is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners today about your journey and about a journey they might be about to leave on in this kind of practice?
You know, I think just follow your passion. I think we're in a great time in equine medicine. I think it's a little bit scary. We know that there's a lot of people leaving. We know that there's a lot of people not coming in. But I think it's also an opportune time. It's an opportune time for us to make it what it needs to be sustainable going forward. And that means thinking outside the box. What is it going to take for you to be in equine medicine and be happy and be vulnerable? Talk to people. It's okay to, I'm going to get some flack for this. It's okay to not want to be on call all the time. I get that. But
it's like your dad said, what do you need, Marianne, to be happy in doing this thing that you love?
Right.
You know? Yeah.
And
so important.
It is. And so I think people just need to keep talking and keep being open, keep being vulnerable, and just tell people, this is what I need to be happy and to stay in the industry. And we will all work with you. Don't be afraid of your other practitioners. We want to help. We want you here.
Yes, we do. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Marshall Gibson. And thank you all out there for listening to the Business of Practice podcast. And a big thanks to our sponsor, Care Credit. And to all my listeners out there, be brave. Embrace change.